and welcome back to the FPL Lounge podcast. We are back a little later than usual, but we are back all the same with our Game Week 24 preview. My name is Chris Hopkins, and I'm joined by the blue card to my yellow card. It's Andy Case. Andy, I feel like especially in the FPL Lounge, we always defer to you for any lawmaking or football lawmaking judgments. Obviously, you know, long-time listeners may be aware or should be aware that you are a formerly qualified referee. But what are your thoughts on the sin bin? Used, I guess, quite extensively in some other sports, but feels untested because it is untested in football. But yeah, do we know any details about what it would be used for and things like that? I assume it's dissent and sort of minor offences, I would guess.
Well, that were, yeah, dissent and what they're calling cynical fouls. Yeah. I mean, I'm absolutely here for it. Like, we've seen over many years, like, dissent and petulance getting worse, not better. Increased reports of referees actually being attacked. It's happened in a couple of professional games in England, actually, this season. Fans running on the pitch and running at referees in League One. I think it was Port Vale a few weeks ago. It's getting worse, not better. And the consequences are just not high enough, frankly. Like, the bar for dissent is still a bit too grey for me. And so, therefore, it's not applied, like, consistently. But then you're never going to get that with something that's so subjective. And it's hard when it's not black and white anyway for refs to implement it. So I suppose this doesn't help with that side of things. But I just hope that with a more significant consequence, you know, 10 minutes with a man down, that things maybe would change. People in the past have advocated for things like penalties for dissent or points deductions and things like that. And I don't know, maybe that's quite a significant penalty, but punishment. But hopefully this type of thing would make people think twice. And particularly on the cynical fouls thing as well. Like, how many times do you see, like, counterattacks ruined on the halfway line? And it just doesn't feel appropriate getting a free kick on the halfway line. Like, yeah, often the person gets booked. But like a very promising attack, which, you know, had a decent chance of a counterattack being like a reasonable goal scoring opportunity, and then like a free kick on the halfway line, it's just not an equal, like, payoff, is it? So losing a man for 10 minutes would give me a little bit more sense of satisfaction if that happened against me.
I mean, I think that one feels like it's got the most close application to parallel to rugby, perhaps. Like, you know, a deliberate knock-on is an instant yellow, basically, isn't it? Because that's stopped, you know, not a clear try scoring opportunity, but it's probably stopped what could have developed into a decent move or potentially a good opportunity. I mean, maybe you don't know this, maybe this hasn't been thought about, but I'm just thinking about that specific situation. Would that player also be at risk of, but would they have the same kind of, would they be walking the same red card tightrope as the yellow card currently gives them, I guess would be my question. Because
now,
because that then makes it good, because like if they then did, you know, got a 10 minute suspension, come back on the pitch and did another one, then that would have ordinarily been a red card, right?
So this is where it's where because I haven't been involved in amateur football since the blue card initiative came in, I'm less up to scratch on how it's used there. But even then, how it's used there may not be exactly how they could choose to implement it differently if it were to be brought into the game fully, right? But the way it works roughly is that in different instances, like a blue is not like you can still get a blue and still have a room for two yellows, which to me doesn't make sense. Although I think two blues does equal a red still. So if you get done for dissent a second time, that is then equivalent. But if you do something that's just like a normal foul that's worth a yellow, that's not a cynical foul or a dissent, then you still just get a yellow for it, even if you've already had a blue. And but then if you get another blue or yellow because you've had one of each, if you get a second one, you then get a red, right?
So it's not quite proposed to work in quite the same way as the you know, the hypothetical and sometimes disgusting commentary orange card, which is kind of like for the tackle,
which doesn't make sense to me though, because if dissent or cynical fouls right now are worth a yellow, then I get the whole thing about double jeopardy, and you've already had like a punishment for the crime, right? If you go in the sin bin, but then don't commit the crime. Like if you do a second thing, you've committed a second crime, right? So I just, from my point of view, if it was ever implemented, for me, they should be like essentially equivalent, right? And if you pick up two cards, you're off. If you pick up two cards of any color, you're that equals a red card, right?
Yeah.
But if you give the ref dissent or do a cynical foul, it's a blue, and you also get a 10-minute sin bin if it's your first one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's interesting. Obviously, you know, as a bit of a segue, we should move on. I feel like you and I could talk about this forever, and maybe we'll spend some time talking about it forever this weekend, because we are going to be watching the Super Bowl together. But I do think there is, this isn't the point, and obviously this is ultimately should be, I guess, deterrent more than something that would get used that often, one would think. But equally, I think you've got to think about the product on the pitch here, and I do wonder how disjointed games could become if you end up with like three occasions of players being sin binned. But you know, I guess it doesn't always have the opposite effect that it can have in rugby, like, you know, a sheer man advantage. There are gaps, whereas, you know, a sin bin in football, you just put 10 men behind the ball, and can it make games, yeah, feel the product, I guess, on the pitch feel a little bit better. I think that sort of parallel to the NFL, like generally rule changes in American football are to benefit the product. And I get the blue cards aren't to benefit the product, it is to be, you know, to protect referees and being perhaps a deterrent for you know, infringements in the laws of the game. But yeah, but equally, you know, I'm sure there'll always be with any law change in football, particularly when it comes to referees, it's all about the implementation and the consistency in doing it, and that's always going to be the big question mark, because, you know, there was supposedly an increase in yellow cards for dissent at the start of the season, and that felt like it died in about game week two or three. So anyway, let's move on. Let's actually talk about the game of FPL, because that is what ultimately we are here for. Game week 24 preview, as always, we'll start by running down the game week fixtures. We'll have a quick chat about this week's talking points, of which there are plenty, and a bit of a strategy chat for Andy and I to get our heads around. We've got some new players on the radar for you, and we will be swimming against a tide this game week before finishing, as we always do, with captaincy and who the heck is that. Let's start then by running down those all important game week 24 fixtures. Your deadline for this FPL game week is Saturday the 10th of February at 11 a.m. UK time, because our lunchtime kickoff is Man City hosting Everton. We've got a number of 3 o'clock kickoffs. They include Fulham versus Bournemouth, Liverpool versus Burnley, Luton versus Sheffield United, Spurs versus Brighton, and Wolves versus Brentford.
Saturday tea time sees Nottingham Forest versus Newcastle, before Sunday's fixtures are West Ham versus Arsenal and Aston Villa versus Man United. There is a Monday night football this game week, and that's a London derby, Crystal Palace versus Chelsea.
Might be the loser gets the sack derby as well, potentially. Ooh. So yeah, could be an interesting one. Plenty of FPL news then, Andy, to get our listeners caught up on. Couple of double game weeks announced. We've also had the conclusion of quite an important FA Cup replay between Chelsea and Aston Villa, which gives us another guaranteed fixture in the blank game week 29. And obviously all of this will lead us then towards chip strategy. So announced before, I think, the last FPL deadline, but after we recorded the podcast, was an extra game in double game week 25. And I think we were all fairly confident once upon a time that this was going to happen, and then that confidence dwindled pretty quickly because it hadn't been announced, but then it did get announced. So Liverpool and Luton are also doubling in game week 25 alongside Man City and Brentford. Another double game week is announced for game week 28, which it also involves Luton and their rearranged game with Bournemouth, which was called off earlier in the season due to Tom Lockyer being taken ill on the pitch. And then, Aston Villa lost to Chelsea in the FA Cup fourth round replay, which means that their match, Aston Villa's match in game week 29, against West Ham, will definitely go ahead, so will not be a victim of a blank. So we've got three guaranteed fixtures now in that blank game week 29, and we'll know the full slate after the conclusion of the FA Cup fifth round. Where does this leave us, Andy, with with chips. I guess there are the majority of teams between now and game week 28 have five fixtures, right? But there are a handful with six and a handful with four, and some of the ones with six come at different times. Even some of the ones that have five fixtures double once and blank once. So how on earth do we start to approach this and think about those chips? And obviously, you know, blank game week 29 is obviously also on the horizon. It appears it's going to be quite a large, quite a hefty blank, probably, you know, maybe 10 teams or five fixtures being postponed that game week. It's going to leave managers with quite a lot to think about.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievably complicated, basically, is the answer. How do you go about doing it? I mean, doing your best to try and look ahead and there. I mean, I don't know if we can sit here and recommend any particular ones, but there are a number of websites and apps that will allow you to look ahead to future, how your current team would look in future game weeks, and different permutations if you use different transfers in different game weeks and whatever. That would be probably my biggest tip in the sense of in situations like this, the thing that I find the most helpful, because you can see just easier to have, like, I can skip straight ahead to game week 26 right now and see what my team would look like without any changes, or if I made certain changes, what would it then look like, that type of thing. But yeah, bigger picture, trying to obviously Ben Krellin, you know, that goes without saying on Twitter. He's obviously keeping you up to date with the various fixtures. And yeah, in the short term, the key thing to be aware of is the teams doubling next game week in game week 25, but then also the ones that blank, and Luton and Liverpool in particular, obviously double in 25 and then also both blank in 26. So that's the key things, at least in the short term, to be aware of. And I think I'd just add to that in the blank in 29 is expected to be massive. If that's not something you've picked up on yet, like I say, go and look at Krellin or wherever else, because those three guaranteed fixtures we have, there is now no guarantee that we'll get any more. There's a reasonable chance we might get one more. If you're lucky, you might get two more. But beyond that, we're looking at a really, really big, probably one of the biggest blank game weeks we've had in a while in that game week 29. And so if you were, you know, you've got to be prepared for that in one way or another, be that a free hit or a wild card or whatever. I can imagine some people really wanting to load up, and I understand the temptation on doublers in 25, because Liverpool and Luton and City have decent fixtures in the longer run as well. Luton in particular, with that double that Chris mentioned, announced in 28 now too. But you know, for every extra fixture you gain by having one of those players in 25, you lose in 26, right? So it is almost a quid pro quo. Don't go, I guess, yeah, this is what I'm saying. My final point really on this would be, don't go worrying like so much about the doublers if it's particularly at expense of you then having a gap in your team in 26, because then those things just cancel out, right? And you fixed your team in a certain position for no actual gain. So yeah, just be careful and think ahead as much as you possibly can, really.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. Yeah, obviously, you know, if you want to avoid having chips or taking hits in game week 26, then there are only three players that you can bench. So yeah, if you bring in Liverpool players that double in 25 and then blank in 26, then yeah, you can only bench three of them. And obviously, you know, you might still have Chelsea players left over. Obviously, they don't double in 25, but they blank in 26. Tottenham, the same. I think also Brentford usually would be quite an appealing team right now to target, the fact that they've got that double game week in 25, but they also don't blank in 26, and actually they're not going to blank in 29 either. Having said that double game week couldn't get much more grim, could it, frankly, Andy? I think they've got City and Liverpool in that double game week. So yeah, where we would often, you know, perhaps ordinarily be targeting Brentford, and maybe even, you know, Brentford defenders thinking, oh, 4 points is, you know, almost a return. Well, if they can see the number of goals, then those defenders aren't getting those points, and Mark Fleckon isn't getting those points. So yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one, I think. And yeah, try to make as much of it, or do as much of your kind of research as possible. But yeah, Andy is completely true, or completely right to really highlight blank game week 29 as one that will need some planning. I mean, obviously you can use chips to get out of it, whether that's wild card or whether that's a free hit, I guess. But the other kind of tactic, Andy, is dead ending, or what is known in the FPL community as dead ending, which is essentially planning as much as you can for that game week with three transfers over a number of game weeks, and then sort of shifting out of that as soon as possible afterwards with a wild card. Is that the kind of best way to explain that if listeners haven't heard that term before?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, basically, like, it's a way of not worrying about the fact that, well, basically the opposite of what I just said, really, the warning for game week 26, right, in that dead ending into and then using your wild card out of, which is a potentially, by the way, a strategy for game week 26 if you can make it work, but you might well, and then I suppose you could free hit in 29. As you say, kind of not worrying about the fact that your team, that you're manipulating your transfers towards making sure you've got players in 29, regardless of the consequences. Because, like, longer term, usually if you do that, that might be fine in the blank game week, but then you end up with a team full of players that you wouldn't normally want from, like, lesser teams, right? But if you know you're going to then wildcard straight out of that, then that doesn't matter ultimately, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess there are a few more things that are maybe worth mentioning at this point, Andy. And obviously, we mentioned that, you know, free hitting in 29 could be something that managers will want to do. Obviously, a lot will still have all three chips, the triple captain, the free hit and the bench boost. And thinking about strategically when to play them is going to be really interesting and key. I mean, obviously, we defer to Ben Crellin's superior fixture knowledge as much as possible on this podcast. But he does believe that there is going to be another large double game week, possibly as late as game week 39. So that might be one to save a bench boost or possibly a free hit for if you want to play what I would describe as an attacking free hit to take advantage of a double game week rather than a defensive free hit or sort of tide you over a blank game week. Game week 34 also might have a couple of doubles and then maybe also a couple of blanks in. So there's plenty to think about, but it doesn't necessarily mean that game week 29 will be the best time to play a chip. And I think given that we know it's going to be a pretty large blank ahead of time, albeit we don't exactly know the fixtures at this point, maybe dead ending into 29 would be the way to go. I guess the other chip that we haven't mentioned really yet is triple captain, Andy, and obviously with Man City having a pretty appealing double game week in 25, triple captain Erling Haaland in that game week is going to be especially appealing, especially if, given the next time City might have a double game week, which could be 34 or 37, it may be more pertinent to use a different chip that game week. So I can see triple captain being particularly popular in 25. I guess the other advantage of that is that at this point we know what those fixtures are going to be, whereas, you know, City double later in the season, we won't necessarily know those fixtures. But double game week 28 for Dominic Solanke, that could be an interesting one too.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to look at that as an option for sure. Just to clarify as well, you said the big double game week will be game week 39.
Sorry.
That is not going to be a thing. Impossible. There's no such thing. 37 is the one that's going to be the large double game week potentially. On triple captain, I think it's exactly as you say. We know now what the state of Haaland is, what the state of the fixtures are in that game week. Who knows what could happen? Haaland could get injured again. City could have big Champions League games where there could be even more rotation. I mean, there's potential for rotation because of the Copenhagen game now for Haaland, but, you know, that's only even more so if they're playing Real Madrid in a semi-final, right, rather than Copenhagen in a last 16 game. So whilst Solanke has two home games, Sheffield United and Luton, I think it is, in game week 28, that is appealing. Bournemouth, one of the top two or three creative teams in the league at the moment. Solanke's been up there in the non-penalty XG numbers as one of the best forwards in the game recently. So it's really not a bad shout. But bottom line is Erling Haaland, isn't he? And with two home games where he could, I mean, Pep Roulette is always a problem. But as far as we know, he could well start them both. And, you know, Haaland in two home games is frankly like the best you can possibly hope for with that, for the ceiling of that triple captain chip. And so, yeah, it's going to be very popular.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the radar then. And I guess some of our radar picks are going to be reflective of those blank and double game weeks on the horizon. Nothing on the centre for us this week. Obviously, Erling Haaland was there last week, but I'm sure he was transferred in en masse and didn't end up. Well, he got one assist, didn't he? But it wasn't quite the comeback to FPL that many owners would have wanted. We'll go to the mid-range then. And I guess we're grouping Liverpool attackers here. Difficult to know exactly who to target, and frankly all three of these that we're going to mention have their pros and they have their cons. I think we're also going to be almost recording during Jurgen Klopp's press conference, so if he gives us any tidbits then maybe we'll be able to include them, but maybe just want to listen to or take some note of what as you're listening to the podcast. Diego Jota here is, I mean, he was on the fringe last week, Andy, I think, for us. But he still remains kind of an all vibes, no stats pick, frankly. The underlying numbers are poor, but we know that he's, you know, a good player, 8.1 million as well. Not uber affordable, but you know, could definitely be worse. Mo Salah currently not fit, but top in the game for expected goal involvement, and obviously we know what Salah can bring. And then Darwin Nunez is obviously a bit more of a maverick, let's say. Very good underlying numbers, but not the best finisher in the league, and is obviously listed as a forward, which maybe changes things from an FPL point of view as well. But ultimately all of these players have a good fixture in 24, double in 25, but ultimately do blank in 26. If you are to bring them in, you have to be ready to either sell after 25 or bench for that game week.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what stopped some of them being a bit higher up, at least, right, as well. And the fact that, you know, you can't have them all, or I suppose you could have all three of these, but then you're investing a lot of money and not having anyone like a Trent or a Robbo or whatever at the back. So, yeah, it's unusual, I think, for us to have players on the mid-range, particularly who blank in a couple of game weeks' time, but their three fixtures over the next two game weeks are Burnley, Brentford and Luton at home, all three of them. Like, I don't think that can be stressed enough. Like, yes, obviously they have a cup final in game week 26, and maybe there might want to be, especially with Salah's fitness, that might throw in even further rotation thinking. But I think the bottom line, Liverpool are in a title race. They've got three home games that they have to be taking advantage of and winning. So you're going to think he's going to want to put out as strong a team as he can in all three games. And the upside opportunity here, I mean, there aren't many teams blanking ultimately. And it feels like you could prioritise allowing those, you know, bench spaces for Liverpool assets here, because the upside is just so high. I guess this is bad on us, really, because we're not nailing our colours to any particular mast. I mean, very unusually for us, I'd probably lean Jota, which, given his, it's not even like low, like bad compared to the other two underlying numbers, it's just really, really poor. He's had 0.68 non-penalty XG in the last six matches of his, sorry, which is bad. Like that type of person would be absolutely nowhere near even close to our radar on a usual situation. But it's just so weird, because he just always seems to be in and around goal opportunities. Like, that is what your eyes tell you, even if the numbers don't, when you watch Liverpool play. And he just seems to snap up chances when he gets them. So, I mean, starts and minutes becomes more of a problem if Salah comes back. He has played through the middle a bit, but even despite him being better or finishing more than Darwin does, Darwin still seems to get the nod sometimes, or more often than not. Like, I think if everyone's fit, he tends to go Diaz, Darwin, Salah, although we have seen Diaz, Jota, Salah when everyone's been fit. So yeah, obviously when in game week 24, Salah's not expected to be back, and that would facilitate Jota on the right and Nunez through the middle probably, although those two do seem to switch a bit. So you know, less of a worry for game week 24 in the immediate. And I suppose maybe that means Salah probably shouldn't be on the mid-range here, at least, because he's actually not going to be probably playing in this game week. So it's more like a longer term thing for him. And if you're able to free up funds and get him in, he is ultimately more reliable, the top in the whole game for expected goal involvement in his last six matches. But those last six matches in the league at least were quite a while ago now, and he's had an injury, and will he be back up to match fitness? And he's, you know, 12.9 million or whatever he is now. That is a lot of money for, you know, a lot of uncertainty that surrounds him. So yeah, I guess there's an argument here, maybe he should have been slightly lower, particularly with this game week's problem. And then Darwin, yeah, unbelievable underlying numbers, the anti-Jota in some respect, unbelievable underlying numbers, has had them for many, many weeks now. And again, if it was another player, he probably would have been towards the center of our radar at some point with the amount of underlyings he's getting. But he just consistently has shown us he cannot finish. And people keep going back to him and trusting him, and I get it. And I wouldn't, and you know, we've authorized him being on the mid-range of our radar here. So I wouldn't necessarily slate anyone for taking the gamble in with a double game week coming up, because although his ability to stick the ball in the back of net hasn't been great, you are getting double the amount of minutes. So yeah, two tickets to the lottery, I guess, in that sense. And he is, you know, cheaper, significantly cheaper than the other two. Jota's at 8.1 at the moment, and Darwin's only 7.4 million, and obviously doesn't take up a midfielder slot. So, yeah, I mean, fifth in the whole game for non-penalty XG, Darwin Núñez. So, got to be something to be said for that with Burnley, Brentford and Luton at home.
Yeah, I'm. The more I think about this, the more I'm probably not going to do it. But then equally, you kind of, like any of these three, but then you feel a little bit like you may be missing an opportunity, or it has the potential to really burn. Yeah, you know, I think I'm with you. If I was to lean to any of them, it would be Jota. I think me and Darwin we've had our moment, and unless I see something significantly different in terms of his long-term ability to put the ball in the back of the net, I'm going to avoid him because I find him quite a frustrating own. And you know, frankly, as we say, and you know, as we always, you know, kind of our ethos for the FPL Lounge is that you got to kind of enjoy playing the game, and he actually frankly makes me not enjoy playing the game. So he's not involved. I think Salah's basically on our mid-range really here because of our collective fear that a fit Mo Salah in a double game week is ordinarily an essential own. I think we're going to struggle, at least I am definitely personally, to get him in my team given his affordability. And then Jota, you know, can I go without him? Yeah, probably. But yeah, I kind of don't like any of it because you know, those three fixtures, Andy, as you say, are incredibly appealing. The double is appealing. If you can get through 26, either by selling them or benching them, then they're well worth owning, and they have some pretty good upside, I think, especially when compared to the two players that we're maybe going to move on to next. So yeah, you know, I'm not feeling these, but I think they are worthy of their place on the mid range because I feel like I've kind of got, yeah, maybe just team specific reasons, and I'm sure there are plenty of managers that are going to be listening to this. And I think ultimately this is what we try and do on the FPL Lounge. We try and lay out the pros and cons, but just because it's not working for my team doesn't mean it wouldn't work for others. And I think that if it does work for you, I think I'd encourage you to seriously think about these players.
Yeah, that's it. It's the up, you know, they all have pros and cons. And I guess, like I say, I should probably reiterate again the fact that Salah's, we haven't heard off Klopp yet, but the injury news is that he's very unlikely to be involved at all in game week 24. So we really should highlight that. But the upside for any one of them with those three home games cannot be underestimated. So yeah, like I say, I think whilst I at the start said, you know, be careful not to over focus on those doublers to ruin your team for game week 26, ultimately if you are going to make any leeway anywhere, these Liverpool assets should absolutely be the ones given their potential upside.
Let's move on to Nathan Ake and Josko Gvardiol. I guess these two at the minute are the most affordable routes into Man City's defence. And obviously Man City's defence does rotate, and you know, it always comes with the Pep Roulette health warning. Ake is slightly more expensive at 5 million, Gvardiol 4.8, but I guess Ake is maybe worth the extra 0.2 for what seems like slightly more security in terms of minutes. But ultimately, City double in game week 25 and they play in game week 26. So you don't have any benching issues. They're also very good in terms of defensive underlying numbers and owning a City defender if you don't already, I think would be advised. I don't think we'd advocate, Andy, for the double up if you do already own Kyle Walker. But having said that, Kyle Walker was benched in City's last league game, so maybe moving off him to one of these would maybe be worthwhile to save a bit of money as well. But I think this is more for those that don't currently own a City player. And again, thinking about my team, the fact that they do play in 26 as well means that I find one of these players a bit more appealing than any of the Liverpool ones we just mentioned.
I suppose the upside of the double up is that you're getting, again, two tickets to the lottery of the Pep roulette for City defenders. It depends on how you want to play it with City forwards, though, right? Because there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of people looking at Foden, KDB and Haaland at the moment, right? So, yeah, obviously you could only have one of those if you went with two City defenders. And yeah, Stones was first choice right back, no questions asked last year. He was getting plaudits galore with his stepping into midfield and everything. And so him coming back to fitness does worry me on the Kyle Walker front, personally, as a current Kyle Walker owner. So if I don't have any and I'm looking at bringing one in, then yeah, certainly. I mean, they could all potentially be rotated at any point, but Walker costs 0.6 more than Gvardiol, 0.4 more than Ake, and they both have greater attacking potential. None of the City defenders have amazing attacking potential, but like Ake's had a couple of goals, I think, this year. He does well when he's on the left. He's good at crossing, but when he's playing as a centre back, he's always good for a goal from across himself as well. So he has that like dual threat, whatever position he's playing in, which is good. And Gvardiol often plays as a left back and is very attacking when he does. So, they beyond the fact that actually they're the cheapest as well, that they're two of the most consistent starters this season because they can both play that centre back and left back role. That's helped them both sustain plenty of starts when they've been fit. So, yeah, I think City's fixtures, you know, they're obviously one of, if not the best team in the league, and they double in 25 and play in 26, which is, there's not many teams. In fact, I think it's only them and Brentford, is it, that do that. So, yeah, that's a very handy attribute for them. And they also have, that it's not even like any of those Liverpool doublers that we've mentioned have this over them, because it's also three home fixtures over the next two game weeks for City as well. It's Everton at home this week, and then both the Chelsea and Brentford games in the double are also at home. So really couldn't look a lot better in terms of the fixtures. For I know that there is a Champions League game thrown in there between, is it 24 and 25 their Champions League game, or 25 and 26?
That's a good question, one that but I it, don't have.
It's coming up right soon now. Anyway, so yeah, that throws a little bit of a spanner in the works. But
it is between 24 and 25.
Yeah, so particularly here, a spanner. But but like I say, bottom line is they're in a title race, and that's Copenhagen away. And even Man United made Copenhagen, you know, look not great. So I'd back City to be able to do them comfortably. And the rotation that comes with that could go either way for owning any of those players. It might be a good thing or a bad thing that there's rotation. So yeah, they're definitely good options, I think, at the moment, for sure.
The 10th best team in the Danish league made Copenhagen look pretty ordinary when I went out there in December. So yeah, I wasn't very impressed with Copenhagen at all. So yeah, I don't know how they've managed to get through their Champions League group, frankly, but there we are. Moving outwards to the fringe, Andy, let's try and rattle through a couple of these as best we can. There are a couple on here that are repeats from last week, so those may be easier to start with. Let's start, Kevin De Bruyne being one of them. Obviously, he got another return in City's game on Monday. Is becoming increasingly more expensive, frankly, at 10.8 million, but I think he was 10.4, was he, or maybe even 10.3 when he first returned from injury. So yeah, getting pretty popular, but still crucially is cheaper than Mo Salah. So if you are looking for a player that doubles in 25, definitely has a fixture in 26, and is definitely going to be fit, then Kevin De Bruyne is perhaps the way to go, but obviously doesn't quite have the explosiveness that Mo Salah has historically had. And then Adebayo at Luton, I mean, I think we would have probably moved him off the fringe, Andy, had had Luton's double in 28 not been announced, because obviously, you know, double in 25 is all well and good, and that's great, you know, but a couple of teams have that too that we've already mentioned. Luton do blank in 26, so he becomes one of those players that you would have to bench or sell, but obviously there is an advantage now to keeping Adebayo around if you do bring him in now, because Luton do double again in 28, and I think that's a pretty appealing double, Andy, from memory. I think it is it's Bournemouth and Sheffield United, I think, in
Villa.
That?
I think it's Villa and Bournemouth. But yeah, still ultimately it's two fixtures, isn't it? And they, you know, they got two doubles in three game weeks. So despite the fact it's a blank kind of in between. So
Villa's 27, so it's Palace and Luton in 28, I think would be Luton.
Palace and Bournemouth. They can't play themselves.
Yes,
yeah,
of course. Yes, Palace and Bournemouth. There we go.
Right. We got there. Good work, team.
So yeah, I think that's fairly appealing, I guess, if you want to keep him around. Another player that is appearing on the fringe, Andy, and I think he has been on the radar, or at least mentioned in the anyone else a few times, is Alejandro Garnacho. Obviously, I'm sure you can talk in a bit more depth about him, but I think his price is hugely appealing here. He has a little bit of Jota vibes about him, in the sense that there aren't loads of underlying numbers to back this up at the minute. But I think if you are trying to free up some cash to either make way for KDB or make way for Mo Salah, if that's the way you want to go next game week, then sort of downgrading a midfielder, perhaps a Saka, perhaps a Jared Bowen, maybe to a Garnacho at 4.9 million, definitely has some appeal, doesn't it?
Well, similarly to Adebayo, actually, and you mentioned the point that obviously it kind of contradicts what we said at the start, in the sense that bringing him in would mean he blanks in 26. But again, I think we can just about justify having him, because if that helps you, he doubles, like you say, in 28. And then if it frees up money to facilitate a Kevin De Bruyne who does play, for example, in 26 and double in 25, then fair enough. I think that's worth having him for a slot on your bench. And similar would be said about Garnacho, regardless of what I'm about to say about his actual ability. And, you know, in its own right, that a starter, a nailed on starter who's been getting goals and assists, who's 4.9 million, is a great facilitator in your team for other, you know, if you need money for Salah or Haaland or De Bruyne or whoever. So that's great, even as it is. United are actually second on the fixture ticker over the next five game weeks. I take that with a little bit of a pinch of salt, because they don't double and they do have Villa and City away in that run. So that feels a bit strong to me, but I suppose the other three games are Luton, Fulham, Everton, so perhaps that's why. But regardless of the fixtures anyway, yeah, he's a starter, and United are kind of with their a lot of their better players back, he, you know, they're starting to create more chances, which has been good for both him and Hoyland, actually, and he is like a nailed on starter in the team now. I guess where I'd be a little bit cautious is that, although it sounds a bit daft, Martinez being injured again, he's been absolutely essential for our retention and creation, ball progression. And so it can't be underestimated not just for our defensive solidity, but our attacking ability, the extent to which his loss will probably be felt. So that's unfortunate, that he's out for the next 8 weeks as well. But yeah, I mean, I think he's got good chances of, his numbers are better than Jota's, although his numbers weren't fantastic, like you said. He does have a little bit there of, I think, something like 2.8 XGI in his last six matches, which, you know, essentially that's a return every other game for a 4.9 mil player. Yeah, it's a very interesting option, I think.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, a couple of players just to mention that aren't quite making it onto the radar then, Andy, and both play for Wolves. So we've got Hwang Hee-chan and Mateus Cunha here. Obviously, Cunha got the headlines in Wolves' last game, was it, when he got a hat-trick against Chelsea. He's a player that has, I think, generally looked pretty good all year on the eye. I think he's a player that sort of, you know, cliche, gets the fans off their seats. And I think when he was in the Bundesliga, I was pretty impressed with him too. His move to Atletico Madrid didn't quite work out, but yeah, he's obviously got some decent pedigree. I think he's even a full Brazil international, so yeah, I mean, must have some pretty decent pedigree. I guess between these two, we're not quite sure how Hwang returning from international duty and injury affects affects Cunha's place in the team or affects minutes. Obviously, Neto is back as well, and I'm playing pretty well for Wolves too. But Wolves, I don't know if they're like, I don't think they're sort of top of the fixture ticker, but they are playing some teams, especially in the next four, that have conceded a shed ton of goals recently. Their next four games: Brentford at home, Tottenham away, Sheffield United at home, Newcastle away. I mean, the big teams there, Tottenham and Newcastle, have shipped goals for fun. And Brentford obviously haven't been particularly great recently. And then Sheffield United are bottom of the league and I think just conceded, what, five in their last game. So there's definitely opportunities for Wolves attackers. But I think also crucially with these two, yeah, they're pretty affordable and can again facilitate those moves to KDB or maybe to Mo Salah as well, if that's what you need.
Well, the perceived difference in the top sort of six teams on our Fisher ticker is essentially kind of statistically insignificant. They're up there in a pool. They're up there in a pool of kind of six teams right at the top of the fixture ticker that all have barely anything between them. I guess no one has an absolute clear run of greens over the next five game weeks. And it's worth saying, you know, me and Chris often flip between four, five, six game weeks. The logic behind where we pick is usually to do with kind of a clean like run of fixtures. And at this point, it's kind of running up to the first round of European fixtures being completed and before the big blank game week in 29. So that just seemed like a sensible kind of play, because game week 29 will throw up all kinds of crazy situations and would be if you tried to add in those fixtures now, would be massively like wrongly affecting the ticker. So that seemed like a good kind of place to break. And in that stretch, they're in the mix really as having some of the best fixtures of anyone, and they've looked really good under Gary O'Neill, frankly, throughout the whole season. I mean, what he's doing with the squad he's got is pretty unbelievable, really. He's the type of character where, and you've heard, he's been on Monday Night Football a couple of times, speaking really well sort of tactically. I mean, it'd be really interesting to see one day. I can see him being like a contender for like a bigger job as and when one comes up. But yeah, what it's meant is that they've slowly managed to kind of more and more take on board his philosophy, and they've been getting chances, and that's played out. I think why we've had Hwang still been at the Asia Cup, only Cunha would have been the one here. I mean, his what helps him is his underlying numbers have flown up a bit as well. He's in about the top 10 or 12 in the game for non-penalty XG now, which is obviously a good thing. But with Hwang coming back, he is essentially their first choice, and where he'll play, whether it'll be kind of quite midfield or up front. They supposedly, I think, played with a bit of a two up front against Chelsea with Neto and Cunha. I don't know if one was slightly off the other or whatever, but yeah, you've got to think Hwang's in and around that mix for one of those slots, isn't he, now he's back from the Asia Cup. So I guess the reason we put them both on there is just because Cunha's got the recent form and underlying numbers, but Hwang, you think, is first choice, and Neto is obviously a long-term good player for Wolves. So who drops out? Do any of them drop out? Do they flip? Do they, you know, tinker with the formation, try and fit them all in? That's to be seen, I suppose.
I remember when the anyone else bit of our radar was like two sentences, and we've both gone on huge monologues, which has dragged this into 40 minutes first half of the show. But there we are. Anyway, I think...
Well, lots of strategy and lots of doublers as well, though.
Yeah, there's plenty to discuss. And yeah, I hope you continue to find it as informative as frankly we do when we're putting all this together. But let's leave it there. Let's take a short break just to get our breath back, frankly. And then when we return, we will be swimming against the tide.
Here at the FPL Lounge, we are keen to hear from you. You can join in the conversation on Twitter or Instagram at FPL_lounge. We will preview every game week throughout the season, exploring options for your chips and transfers. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your pods so that you have all the information you need before the game week deadline. Thanks for joining us in the FPL Lounge.
Welcome back then. So, swimming against the tide. We should tie up our honey traps, Andy, from last week, although I always forget all of these, frankly. Your one that was no more than four clean sheets, so I guess that was across the whole week, wasn't it? So yeah, but was there really only two clean sheets? I'm reading your notes.
So I think it was actually, well, I think what I heard, because I watched Monday Night Football this week, which was the last game of the game week, and I think they said it's the highest scoring week of football in Premier League history. It's been an absolutely bonkers week. Yeah, as will be demonstrated by the outcome of the next honey trap as well. So, but yeah, on that one, Chris was right not to try and walk into that trap, because he would have been snapped up. Okay. He would not have escaped with any honey, so there was no point trying to take it. Yeah, there were only two clean sheets.
Great stuff. And then, yeah, mine was that no game will outscore Arsenal versus Liverpool, which you did take me up on. But yeah, I mean, Arsenal Liverpool had four goals, but as you say, there was two games with five, one game with six goals, and one game with eight. So yeah,
pretty, I mean, to be outscored by almost half the fixtures, that is absolutely. But when you've got four yourself, that's not bad, is it? Like, that's
quite wild.
Crazy. Yeah,
quite wild. Yeah, but there we go. So, yeah, plenty of goals. An absolute goal fest weekend.
Overriding takeaway though is essentially we're both kind of right. Both of us thought there was going to be goals this weekend, and then there was.
Yeah, easy.
Yeah,
back goals, back what you want. I think that's what we that's where we'd go. Pretty straightforward swimming against the tide for us this week, and it's that Dominic Solanke is the third most transferred out player in the game at time of recording. I think this was maybe influenced, Andy, a little bit by the fact that some transfers would have been done before the Bournemouth-Luton double game week was announced. But equally, Dominic Solanke still has, you know, reasonable fixtures on the horizon. I think City are coming up, but I guess we didn't see a huge reason to be getting rid of him. I guess just, you know, this double just sort of reinforces the idea of trying to keep hold of him at the minute. I mean, there is also, I don't think that but they're by no means guaranteed to be blanking a 29 as well, which, you know, might be too long-term thinking for those that are doing quick transfers every week. But yeah, I think this sort of fell into our lap a little bit, and I think this ties in a little bit to the conversation around Darwin Núñez on the radar. You know, the fact that Dominic Solanke doubles in 28 and is frankly a triple captaincy candidate in that game week with Sheffield United and Luton, and then coupling the fact, for me at least, that I own him and I own Ollie Watkins, and Ollie Watkins is going to be playing guaranteed in game week 29. They feel like real holds to me. And then when you've got Haaland as well, it's difficult to kind of find a way for Darwin into one's team. But yeah, I think, you know, the relevant takeaway for the swimming against the tide section here is that Dominic Solanke, if you own him, is an absolute hold. If you don't have him, I think at some point you're probably going to want to get him in again. So selling him seems bizarre.
I mean, it really does. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine it would be interesting to see like the breakdown of these numbers, because I can only imagine that a lot of those were before the double was announced. Right. But frankly, even before the double was announced, he plays in each of the next five game weeks, which not all players do. Right. And yes, it's City in the blank, but like playing against City is better than playing against no one, ultimately, isn't it? If he helps you field a team, then great. And then after City, it's Burnley and then Sheffield United. And now that week with Sheffield United in has turned into Sheffield United and Luton at home. So he'd never, I mean, I can understand if you're aiming to get Núñez in, you for the point you've just highlighted, really, that there possibly wasn't many places that you could have tried to free up, and maybe you thought Solanke was the least worst option to get rid of. But yeah, it does just seem, I mean, I feel like there's gonna be a lot of people who transferred him out who are then going to want him back in for that double, because as we've sort of alluded to, I can imagine a lot of people not just captaining him, but even thinking triple captain on him that game week. So yeah, it looked like, as you've said, it's one thing to be, I could understand why you maybe wouldn't bring him in right now if you don't already have him, because maybe you would just wait until, like, you could have Núñez for the next couple of weeks and then swap him for Solanke in the blank. But I mean, if you have him, why, it seems odd to kind of waste the in and out there. So yeah, and you could absolutely see Bournemouth creating a boat against both these next two fixtures that he's got, the Fulham defence and the Newcastle defence. So strange one for me.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's hope that one goes okay for us. Let's move on then to captaincy. This feels straightforward yet challenging this week, and I think the main challenge is going to be picking between these teams' assets, I think, ultimately. Man City assets against Everton, it feels like, you know, a nice fixture. I mean, Everton defensively haven't been too bad generally this season, but you would expect City, essentially a fully fit City, to have plenty enough to get past them. And the Liverpool assets obviously have a very appealing fixture against Burnley. I guess if this was a more head-to-head Haaland versus Salah, it may be a little bit more tricky. And I think, therefore, Haaland is absolutely the leader in the clubhouse as to who's going to get my armband this weekend. But you wouldn't put people off, you know, for Phil Foden coming off a hat-trick or a Kevin De Bruyne either, would you? And then I know that some FPL players, I think some football gamblers as well, hate including the 12:30 Saturday kickoff because it can be a weekend ruiner pretty quickly. So maybe you would be more tempted to go for Liverpool, but yeah, Jota's lack of underlying numbers and Darwin Nunez's lack of finishing ability maybe gives us some difficulty trusting those players. And I think if I was to go for a Liverpool asset this weekend, I'd be quite tempted by Trent Alexander-Arnold, Andy.
Oh yeah, for sure. And with his like nailed onness, if you like, of playing too. And there was also some chat before, unfortunately, Conor Bradley, after his fantastic game week, his father passed away and then he wasn't able to play last game week. But and obviously Robbo's back now, but there was some chat that possibly Trent could step into midfield if because Conor Bradley had been playing so well. And so maybe we might see that at some point. So even more, you know, of a reason potentially to want to go for Trent if you were going to go for anyone, because you'd think he's relatively nailed on to play. You know, we did see an unfortunate benching for him a few game weeks ago, and I think like Joe Gomez played at right back or something. But yeah, I just don't see any of that being above Haaland now that he's back and he's had 90 minutes again. And same for De Bruyne if you own them. Yeah, they both just got to be brilliant options, particularly at home there as well. But I know what you're saying about the 12:30 kickoff thing, but possibly the one and only ever piece of elite level sport/fitness insight we'll have ever had from Chris Hopkins would also support the theory. It's not just like it ruining people's weekends thing. You made quite a valid point once, I think, on this show about your previous experience of doing runs early in the morning and whatever, and actually like carb loading at what you would have to be probably something like 9 a.m. or maybe even earlier is quite a difficult thing to do for those 12:30 kickoffs, and it puts off like it upsets a lot of teams and just your human, like, what's it called, circadian rhythm. That's to do with sleep in it, that one, but I don't know if it's the same to do with food. So
there must be some link to circadian rhythm and sort of like how used you are to eating starchy carby food at 9 a.m. or 10 o'clock in the morning. So
it kind of makes players a bit more lethargic, and there's been, I don't know if there's any numbers behind it, but there's always been an accusation that they've been a bit more pedestrian, those early kickoff games, isn't it? So
I feel like they're either amazing or terrible. I don't think there never feels like there's much in between. But yeah, no, I think, don't get me wrong, if I had the facilities and the chefs and the dietitians that Premier League footballers had, you know, I'm sure I would probably more enjoy eating pasta at 9:30 a.m. rather than sort of, you know, chowing down on a Morrison's sort of pre-made one with a plastic fork out the back of a van, which was definitely the case. But yeah, I do think it can sometimes lead, as you say, to some sort of pedestrian sort of jaded looking 12:30 kickoffs. But Haaland's too good an opportunity to turn down here, frankly, isn't he? So I'm sure that's going to be where plenty of armbands would end up. But yeah, I think if I was to go for the Liverpool fixture, I think Trent would be top of my list rather than Jota and Nunez, if I'm honest.
Fair enough.
Let's leave it there then, Andy. Let's finish, as we always do, with a little game we like to call Who the Heck Is That? Each week, Andy and I take it in turns to pick a player from the FPL universe, and the other person has to guess who it is. They get 5 clues, and if they guess it off the first clue, they get 5 points, and off the second clue, they get 4 points, so on and so forth. Each time they hear a new clue, they get 2 minutes to stick or twist on their previous guess. So we don't reveal the answer to the end, so you can play along wherever you are listening to the FPL Lounge podcast. Andy's managed somehow to pick up 13 points in his last three visits to the FPL, to the Who the Heck Is That table. I say somehow, I mean, yeah, we know how he does it. So he's just very good at the game, what can I say? But yeah, he's got a pretty big lead over me at the minute, of 30 points to 21. But yeah, an opportunity to close the gap. I'm going to need to put a bit of a run together myself. So here we go.
Well, if you want, I can hand you some of those, because part of the reason we're recording this so late this week is I've certainly had plenty of runs put together this game this week. That's for sure. But
nice.
Yeah, I mean, it is worth saying I've played one more game than you now, right? So yes, it is a 9-point lead, but there is a bit of you've got one in hand. So yeah. You 5 points here.
It'll be 8 points after in about 10 minutes time then.
Well, yeah, good to back yourself, eh? Yeah, so absolutely. Without further ado, let's crack on with it. With clue number one, and it is this player's fifth season in FPL, and they've already achieved more points than all their other seasons combined. Oh, who the heck is that?
Wow, okay. Right, let's go down those fixtures then. Fifth season in FPL. Okay, so my early obviously I'm at City, Everton, and I'm just thinking Jarrod Branthwaite straight away, and that would potentially make sense because I think he's been on Everton's books for a while now. Would he be 5% owned? I know obviously I'm very keen on him, but I don't know if he'd quite be eligible. Would there be anyone at City? Doesn't feel like they've had any real kind of academy players that have broken through this year. Fulham, I think only Leno would be eligible, and that's a no. Bournemouth, I feel like there could be a Bournemouth player in there. Solanke is the obvious choice from an FPL point of view, but don't think he would have got more points than the previous five combined, or previous four combined. Liverpool, no one really comes to mind either. I guess Bradley would be the one that's obviously got more points than the previous five combined, but I doubt he would have been registered. Burnley feels like a no. Luton, the only player there would be like Ross Barkley. I don't think he's going to be 5% owned either.
We've got 30 seconds.
Struggling here, aren't we? Man United, or Garnacho? Could be, maybe. Again, feels unlikely he's been registered for five seasons, but I think that might be where I'm going to go, Andy. I think I'll go with Alejandro Garnacho, please.
Okay, Garnacho. Clue number two then. No player in the game has been in the official FPL Dream Team, that is their, you know, retrospective hypothetical team of the week, more than this player this season.
No one's been
who
in
the heck is that?
Just Dream Team is
you know, that theoretical team of the week that they do that puts together the best possible.
But it's done by points. It's done by points, right?
Yeah. But they're like the best combination of.
Yeah, cool. There's not some sort of like subjective like measuring.
It's just
points.
But it has to fit within the allowed formations, right? So you couldn't have six midfielders or whatever.
Yeah, it can't be a Garth Crooks team.
If the six highest scoring players are all midfielders, one of them would have to drop out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fine. Okay. I mean, that rules Garnacho out, I think, for me, and it probably rules Branthwaite out as well. But thinking about who, so this player's got a lot. Points. Okay, Spurs, Brighton. Can't think of anyone there. Spurs have got a lot of new signings. Brighton, like a Buonanotte, possibly, but five seasons still very difficult for him. Billy Gilmore wouldn't have been in the team of the week that much. Wolves or Brentford, probably not. Forest, no. Newcastle. Lewis Miley. Again, I don't think he's got enough. He wouldn't have been registered for that many seasons, I wouldn't have thought. I feel like it is a young player, though.
You've got 30 seconds.
West Ham. Not sure about that. Arsenal. Palace. Chelsea. I'm going to have to stick, mate, I think. But I don't think it is Garnacho. But yeah, I get. He might have had like four of the last five game weeks where he's scored a lot of goals. So yeah, I'm going to stick with Garnacho, please.
Okay, clue number three. This player is the top point scorer at their club. Who the heck is that?
That would make sense given clue two. So who would be the top point scorer at Chelsea?
Try and think as well whilst those two things are related, they mean two different things as well.
Yeah, of course. Oh, no, Chelsea's top point scorer will be Cole Palmer, won't it? First clue was more points this year than any other, than his previous three, four combined, wasn't it?
Correct, yeah.
And that would make some sense. And he's been in the team of the week five times. Would he have been registered for five seasons? Yeah, I guess he could have been. He's been, I think he's like 22, isn't he? So he's not exactly a kid anymore.
Well, I didn't say he'd been in it five times, but just...
Oh, more than anyone else.
More than anyone else. No, well, yeah, no one had been in it more than this player. Yeah.
I don't know where I plucked the number from, but maybe my backside. Crystal Palace. No. United. Don't know who United's top point scorer would be, to be honest. Bruno, probably. Villa's would be Watkins, won't be him. I think it's going to be Cole Palmer, Andy, isn't it? I think it's going to be Cole Palmer.
30 seconds.
Do I think... could it still be Garnacho? Top point scorer at their club. I mean, I think that would be Bruno at United, wouldn't it?
You got 10 seconds.
I'm going to switch, mate. Yeah, I don't think it's gone actually. I'm going to switch to Palmer.
Okay. I'm going to have to take that.
Yeah.
So at the end of the time. Clue number four. No player in the game has had a bigger net price rise than this player. Who the heck is Stat?
I think he was 4.5 or 5 at the start of the season, because obviously when the game was made, he was a City player, wasn't he? So, and he must be approaching 6 now, so that implies either 1.5. I mean, if it's a £1.5 million price rise, then that must be the most. If he was 5 and he's now around 6, it could be 0.9. Who would have had more than him? I mean, I guess maybe like Trippier did at one point, but maybe not anymore. This is net price rise based on
their price now versus their starting price.
Yeah. Who else? Saka, possibly. Saka, Watkins, Solanke. They kind of give me some concern, particularly Solanke, although he did have a drop last night, I think, whether that affects things or not. Who else would have had a big rise?
You got 30 seconds.
Defenders, Saliba, maybe? I mean, I guess Palmer's got to be up there. None of the other clues would apply to, like, Saliba or Watkins, or I don't think Solanke. So I think I'm going to have to stick. I think I'm going to have to stick with Cole Palmer.
Okay. You got 10 seconds.
I'll stick, please.
Sticking with Cole Palmer. Okay. And clue number 5, then, the final clue. This player is in the top 5 owned in the game in his first season at his current club. Who the heck is Stat?
All right, well, it is his first season at his current club. Top 5 in the game? I mean, he's so affordable, isn't he, that maybe that is right. Haaland must just about, well, they must. Haaland's got to be the top-owned player in the game, hasn't he? Watkins is high. Saka's higher than Palmer. Can't think of anyone else it's going to be, though. I think I should have got this, but I think I should have got this on clue 4. But top players owned in the game, Haaland hasn't been in his last 4. Saka hasn't. Trippier hasn't. Who else did I say? Watkins hasn't. So, yeah. Cole Palmer. Oh, the only other one I'm thinking of at the last minute now is Areola, because he wasn't a starter for a while, was he, at West Ham? But he had that Fulham season when he was a starter. He wouldn't have surpassed his last four combined. He's had rises though, and he must be high owned. Could have been in team of the week.
Got 30 seconds.
Could be. Oh, will he be West Ham's top point scorer? Will that be Bowen? That would probably be Bowen. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to stick. But I have to say that final clue gave me more questions than answers, if I'm honest.
Okay, time's almost up.
Yeah, I'll stick with Palmer.
Sticking on Cole Palmer for a potential 3 points. That is secured. It is Cole Palmer.
The relief.
Yeah, I did wonder if like a Solanke or someone like that might come into the thinking more. But yeah, his fifth season, which is strange. I mean, he got nothing in the first two seasons, didn't register a minute or a point. So kind of only really his third season actually appearing in FPL. Yeah, he's now, you know, I'm going to say nothing. All I'm going to say is the facts, other than the facts, right? And the facts of the matter are that Cole Palmer has been in the team of the week five times this season. Now, listeners can listen back to the conversation we had whilst we were discussing that. And I don't know.
What happened?
Well,
Did I say that he's been in it five times?
Oh, yeah, and he's been in the team of the week five times.
Did I? Oh, I don't remember, mate.
But it has been, strangely, five times, yes.
Well, that is mad.
And no one else has been in it more. Salah and Trippier also been in it five times. I mean, the point of that clue to distinguish from just having loads of points was meant to be like hauls as well, right? He's had
a number
of hauls this season, which he's had five double-digit returns. Obviously top point scorer at his club, 0.9 million net price rise, which there are a couple of others. I'm not on that stat at the moment. I think it was Porro was one of them. Bowen and Porro, the other two, 0.9 million net price rises, but no player with more. And then top five owned in the whole game, which would have thrown me, I think. That seems a lot, I thought, for him. But it's because I guess a few others have had slight drops. Yeah, like Estupiñán was up there at one point earlier in the season, wasn't he? And he's dropped right off. Trips has dropped off a bit, but he's still fourth above Palmer. Yeah, 39% owned Cole Palmer. I wouldn't be surprised, like you said, with them blanking in 26 and possibly again in 29 if that's to decrease a bit sometime soon. But there we are. I mean, three big points gained back there. Three very much needed points.
Needed,
for sure.
Needed. But yeah, still a 6-point gap. That still feels big, doesn't it? It still feels big. Oh, well, there we go. I still feel like it's one of them as well, where if Chelsea were playing in the first fixture of the game, if they were lunchtime on Saturday rather than Monday, might have got that bit earlier. Because what was that second clue? That is points combined.
The first clue was more points than any other seasons, all the other seasons combined. The second clue was no players been in the team of the week more than...
Right. Maybe I've even got it earlier. Maybe. Anyway, never mind. That's what might have been. Lovely stuff.
You've got to be happy with a 3-point return.
Oh, I am. It's just, you need hauls at this point, don't you? But we'll see.
plenty of game weeks to go.
There absolutely is. All right, well, let's leave it there, Andy. Obviously, we spent quite a lot of time at the top of the show talking about strategy, talking about chips, talking about blanks and doubles on the horizon. So I'm sure that may well breed many questions from our listeners. How can they get in touch?
They can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at @FPL_lounge, and obviously last minute pod here. But yeah, if you do happen to listen to us and have any time before the game week starts, let us know what you're going to be doing for these tricky upcoming blanks and doubles.
Great stuff. Yeah, and do remember to rate, review and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. We will be back then ahead of game week 25 at some point this coming week, probably again Thursday or Friday, providing there's no more illness in the FPL lounge. But Andy, until then,
thanks for joining us in the FPL lounge.